Welcome to True Wealth again, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, the host, coming to you from the Clock Tower Studio inside the Coins Plus building at 3201 North Division Street, Spokane, Washington, 99207. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044 locally in Spokane. Outside the area, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. 877-827-2646 or through our website again, coinsplus.com. You can email and we'll get back to you. Coins Plus is a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. And as the years tick by, we've been here a few years for sure, like I've said, a couple decades, and enjoyed it considerably. We've seen ups and we've seen downs and we've seen all kinds of stuff as a business owner, and we've done a tremendous amount of volume. Most people wouldn't believe it if I told you, but it's a lot. And it is a high-volume, low-margin industry for sure, especially if you do it right. There's many companies, businesses, sectors out there that do unfortunately charge heinous prices, and I think what's sad about it and good about it at the same time is it is – when you invest in precious metals-based assets, as I call them, you are truly entering the fully unregulated financial market and the true free market. You buy it, you own it, you are detached, you are you're disconnected in every way. And what's really interesting is, I think I talked about this last week, when, as I went through the kind of the decades kind of evolution or process towards where we are today, and I talked about the fact that you store your wealth. Your wealth is what's called work energy. You get money technically for producing something. You may get disability. That's a little bit different. That's a system where hypothetically other people choose to transfer their work energy to help you out. However, and that should be a charitable function. That's the way God designed it. That's the way our country was designed to operate. But now we are into the redistribution of wealth. And if you are not for the redistribution of wealth, you're a terrible person. Now, of course, you could use church charities to do so, but they say, no, you must separate church from state, which is a complete lie, and let the government handle the redistribution of wealth. Well, there's a difference between charity and redistribution of wealth. The redistribution of wealth is saying it's not fair. The poor guy gets it. You shouldn't have it. You've got too much. It's up to someone else to decide. Charity is where you give either from your abundance or just from your heart. You want to help. Charity cares. Charity reaches out. Charity is the same word as love, you know, in the Bible. Interestingly enough, King James uses the word charity instead of love. Charity is caring. Charity, when churches exercise and used to exercise more charity in society, it came with more than a check. It came with a person. It came with a heart. It came with guidance and leadership and ministry and nurturing and education and personal effect. Now they're like, hey, stay out of my life. Give me my check. Let me live in sin. We have got multi-generational people living in sin in destroyed communities, these ghettos. Now, what happens is, you know, there's this period of time, and it's kind of interesting because when you deal with people, employees in particular, if you get an employee that's just in the wrong job, the wrong place, the wrong time, they're not good at what they do, they're failing. It's interesting to me because most of the time they take responsibility up front. They'll initially admit they're not good, they're not a good fit, they're not doing as well. But if you let them hang around and you let them continue on the paycheck without addressing their poor performance, eventually they transfer the blame to the employer. I don't know why. I've seen it so many times. I've had, you know, a lot of experience managing people and banking up to, you know, 100 and some people and everything else. I've just seen it. It's a bizarre phenomena. And it becomes the employer's fault that they're failing, and the employer isn't teaching them well enough, or the employer, you know, isn't nice enough, or the employer's not there enough, or, you know, but it always starts out with personal accountability, then it transfers. Well, generationally, I think we've probably got this going on in our welfare systems, because there was a, you know, people know when they first get on it, most should know they didn't feel great about it. Now we've got society telling people, don't be ashamed, feel good, you know, enjoy it, savor it. You've got Obama pumping. Obama literally pumped commercials out all over the minority communities to for the SNAP program, which was the food stamp program, and saying, hey, if you aren't on SNAP, you're a bad mom. They literally had these commercials, I heard, where the neighbor mom would say, oh, my little Johnny, he eats better than your little Bobby because I'm on SNAP, you know. And if you don't feed your kid better, if you don't get on SNAP and start feeding your kid better, you're a bad person. Well, the reason they want this, here's what's interesting. In the private marketplace, when a troubled employee starts to transfer blame to the employer, you got a problem. The guy isn't producing. Animosity begins to develop between him and the government. When you're talking about the welfare system, what's interesting about this, you got the same set of problems, but the Democrats want it. The socialists want it, okay? So what happens is you start to get this division with the government. You start to get this lack of guilt, right? So like I said, you know, at first, as they start to divide, they start to pull away, they start to vilify, they start to victimize themselves, they start to get content, they start to think they're doing fine, it's the employer's fault. Well, it's the same with the welfare thing. It's like, it's not their fault that they don't have a job. It's not their fault that they don't get up and do anything with their lives. It's the government's fault. The government isn't giving them enough darn money. Interestingly enough, I was speaking with a friend today who has been a human or a relative who's been a upper, you know, does upper level human resources management and a lot of hiring and has done an extensive amount of hiring. And she was telling me the stories of when she worked she managed a territory for a large staffing firm, one of the top in the world. And they work, they hustle to fill positions for all kinds of companies, and they're very, very good at it. And so what they do is they blanket, you know, the marketplace. They get all kinds of resumes, they get all these people, and then they basically try to match people up with jobs. She said the biggest threat was the unemployment people that they constantly apply for jobs for which they are vastly unqualified. She said because unemployment requires them to apply for 5 jobs a week. So they apply for 5 jobs a week and say, I just haven't heard back, but they really are just freeloading off the system. So she would get some of these people into her company and they'd apply for a job they knew they didn't qualify for. And she'd say, well, I have a position you do qualify for. And she'd set up interviews and whatnot. And she said that, you know, many, many, many times these people on unemployment start to backpedal and back out, skip interviews and say, well, I can't start for 8 weeks or 9 weeks till their unemployment runs out. They don't want to lose their unemployment. It's free money. They feel like, hey, if I work, I don't get my free money. Folks, that is a sick mindset that we've created in this nation, is it not? And she tells me this is very prevalent, that they don't want to give up the remaining term of their unemployment. And the other thing too, if you've ever looked at the statistics of people, employable people, before and after their employment runs out, it's very interesting what the percentage of people that get a job after their employment runs out, or unemployment. Let's see here. I'm going to see if I can find that statistic. So anyway, you know, people will stay unemployed, and the unemployment rate is very, very, very high. And so the percentage statistics is that 83% of people get a job within 6 weeks, 67 within 3 weeks of their unemployment running out. Isn't that odd that their unemployment runs out and suddenly they can go get a job? Folks, we have a broken system. I mean, we do. And I definitely didn't even get on the air to talk about that today. And somehow I ended up here, as all of you know, I'm so good at. But I mean, it's the whole mentality of vilification. And the people see, you know, these people that are mooching off the government, they see the government as the enemy, but the Democrats want to leave them there because guess how they vote? They vote gimme. They vote gimme more. Gimme more money. And I'll tell you, they don't get more money, but they keep chasing the stupid neon rainbow. How dumb are they? You've got conservatives that are saying, look, we want to create an environment where you can have income. Now, the thing, there's so many lies out there now about capitalism and income. There, it is absolutely out of control. Because when you start to produce jobs and people get jobs, you start to produce a robust economy. What happens in those economies is wealth begins to flourish. It's kind of like in Israel under Solomon, where it said silver became so common, it was like rocks in the street. Well, back then people are like, oh, that's just silver, leave it there. Well, today we'd love to have it. But he created so much wealth with his wisdom and blessings from God that it got where silver was like a rocks in the street. It was everywhere. And when an economy booms, that's what happens. That's why the left is so afraid of this stuff. That's why a good friend of mine who's in the equivalent of the Federal Reserve Bank in Europe, in London, told me that our Federal Reserve here will be jamming rates up as fast as they can once Trump gets the economy cooking, because they don't want it cooking. They want people down and out. They like it. That's how the Fed makes money. If we create wealth and lots of wealth, we don't need the Fed. We start to pay our debt back. They don't want that. They want us in debt. They want us that way big time. One bailout at a time, one bailout after the next, folks. I don't think you might realize how bad it is. These companies, these industries, Wall Street, they go through the roof as far as their waste and expenditures. People, I mean, Bernie Madoff stole, what, $60 billion? What do you do with $60 billion? How do you lose $60 billion? I don't even get it. Did he just piddle the money away on such stupid investments so bad, so fast? I mean, he can't even run a Ponzi scheme with $60 billion. You'd think that if you did, I don't know, you'd think you could fake that. You'd think that you could just keep a big bank account and just pay people back when they want it or whatever. I mean, I don't know how you burn $62 billion, but he apparently did. I can't even comprehend it. I'm sure you could buy a couple cool things with that. But our system is generally sitting in a position, folks, where it is broken so fundamentally, people hate it. Socialism is the new capitalism. Socialism and communism is the new republic. It's the new mentality. It is inbred in us so deeply that I just don't see it coming out. Short of what? I don't know. We're embracing demonic systems so badly. This country, like it or not, was founded on Judeo-Christian ethics and principles. You know, it's specifically that way. It's a time. There was a time where God was blessing this nation and the people, and they were a variety of views, which you're always going to see in theology, but they were universal in their belief in basically in a deity, in a single God, in a biblical style God. And a lot of them were just hardcore on your knees, praying to God, begging Jesus, Christians. That's where those are the roots of this nation. We were founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and we're losing that now. I was listening to the news today, and, you know, even on Fox, which is a generally conservative news source, last week they came out with that Harvard study on media bias, CNN 97% left, 3% right, you know, negative against Trump. And then, you know, Fox was down the middle 50-50. That's not bad. I mean, that's okay. But Trump is on this non-apology tour around the world. And I was listening to these news anchors say, you know, argue, well, there's a lot of debate about who Jerusalem belongs to and who is, you know, and they're going around and around about this. And it's like, you got, that's a simple biblical issue. It's very simple. Do you believe the Bible or not? Well, interestingly enough, God put the deed to Jerusalem in the Bible, right? You had the Jacob and Esau thing, and God gave it to Jacob. And there it lies in the Bible. So no matter what happens through history and Muhammad rewrites this and things go crazy like that, it doesn't matter because it's always deeded in the Word of God. I believe God did that because he knew that Word will always be here. There was like that movie years back called The Book of Eli, I think it was, where the guy had like the last known Bible on earth and the earth was dark and bad. It was pretty interesting, Denzel Washington movie. I don't think we'll ever get to that. I mean, God preserves his Word. That's one thing that he will preserve and spread is his Word. As long as he spreads his Word, that is going to be out there, that Israel owns Jerusalem. So when you get these people that don't want to accept that, there's only one way that you can not accept that, and that is to reject the Bible wholly. And this is becoming more and more and more prevalent in America. Years back, like in 2009, I think, I had ran into some statistics, and I'm going to butcher them a little bit. But this is how I think they went. 40 years earlier, in 69, a study had been done on high school graduates. Like, just these numbers are going to be within a few percentage points. Say roughly 38 or 39% or 37% of graduating seniors in 1969 considered themselves to be evangelical Christian. 4% considered themselves atheists. In 2009, 40 years later, get this, 4% of those students, the numbers flip-flopped. It went from 4% considering themselves atheists to 38% considering themselves atheists, or 30-some percent. It went from 30-some percent, say 37 or whatever, considering themselves evangelical Christians, down to 4%. We've had an immediate flip-flop. I remember back, you know, studying a lot of this stuff in the 80s and having people explain how unchurched and ungodly Europe was and how immoral they were. Literally, the immorality in Europe was like we are here today. Incredible sexual tolerances and all kinds of things at the time. And I remember thinking, what a mess, America. I hope we never get like that. And they explained that at the time there was only 4% of the society was churched, whatever that means. And now we're there. Only 4% of society now, I think it is, goes to church, something like that, regularly. And we're falling apart. We're coming apart at the seams. I mean, are we not? And it's really interesting to watch Trump on his, you know, world tour, because being the pseudo non-Christian, you know, he's a tough guy to read when it comes to that point. But he's a pseudo non-Christian, meaning that he never really claimed to be a born-again evangelical believer. I believe that's changing as he's in office. I believe Pence is godly. I've heard that he's got a circle of men that pray with him every day and all kinds of things. He's transforming. But to think of a guy from that perspective that gets in there and he goes and meets Benjamin Netanyahu and he's standing on the right side of goodness. Obama was like the defender of Islam. He brought Islam into this nation. It is crazy. So, you know, when I say that this country was built on American Judeo-Christian values, or however you want to call it, and the separation of church and state, but not the separation of God from state, that's the understanding of social justice. So Thomas Jefferson, here's a quote from Thomas Jefferson. All men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government. And then he wrote, God who gave us life gave us liberty. Can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed a conviction that these liberties are the gift of God? So stop right there. Jefferson says, how can a nation be secure in their liberty when we remove the conviction that the liberties or freedoms are the gift of God? Okay? No. Socialism, communism says these are the gift of the government. The government decides what you can and cannot do. The government provides all. The government is all. He also wrote, Almighty God hath created the mind free. All attempts to influence it by temporal punishments or burdens are a departure from the plan of the holy author of our religion. God gave us a free mind. God gave us free will. He says any attempt to influence it by temporal punishment or burden, meaning you don't think for yourself, you know, or you will be punished or giving you a burden for doing so, or, you know, like communism, putting the responsibilities of others on your back. He says they're all a departure from the plan of the holy author. I'm going to read a few more. He also wrote, I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal, I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Guess what he wrote that about? He wrote that about the first mission to go after the Barbary pirates. This was in his letter before they went out after the Muslims. He said, I've sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Think of that. He said, I have put upon the altar of my God, the God of the Bible. What does he say? Eternal hostility. Eternal hostility. Never-ending wrath against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Islam is tyranny over the mind of man. And this is what Jefferson was saying. You know, the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That's a free-minded man. You have, folks, we are getting this. It started with this PC talk, politically correct talk. You cannot speak the truth. People, this intolerance, Vice President Pence spoke at a commencement hearing, a graduation ceremony, commencement ceremony at a college this weekend, and 100 people got up and walked out. Well, guess who they were? It was LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer or questioning, I don't know. Came in pretty much not for any other reason but to disrupt, to turn around and walk out. On the Vice President of the United States, they argued that they disagreed with his policy on LGBT, and then a newscaster I saw kept asking them questions, what do you disagree with? They couldn't say. They didn't know. So then they transitioned to immigration. The big lie is to mix illegal immigrants with legal immigrants. So President George Washington said, while when he was proclaiming our national Thanksgiving holiday, creating it, he said, "It is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to acknowledge their existence based on the hand of God." Folks, he's saying it pure and simple. This is a Christian man that says, it's the duty, our responsibility of all nations to acknowledge the providence, you know, the almighty hand, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent hand of God in our lives. John Adams wrote, let's pump a few more out and get out of here. John Adams said, "We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people alone. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion." He's saying our government, there is no government, basically. There's no government that can contend with immorality and a lack of religion. So our government now is contending with immorality and a lack of religion. He goes on to say avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry will break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made for what? For a moral and religious people. Folks, we're sitting in a system that is the best system in the history of the world, but the fuel that makes that system run is our faith. It's the God of the Bible. Without it, we've got nothing. And that is the true threat to this nation. So socialism, communism, Fabianism, whatever you want to call it, as it begins to encroach the system, the system itself begins to come apart at the seams. There is no option. We can have a small faction of those people among the system. But frankly, if you don't understand and defend the system, which we are being taught no longer to do, it will crumble. Not only will it crumble, what really happens is it transitions. It's this deceptive transition among government types where they say, okay, we're a republic, fact. Then they say we're a democracy, not a fact. A democracy is a transitional form of government that never holds up, it never sustains. A democracy has no legs. The legs of a democracy are the opinion of its people. The opinion of the people can be swayed and persuaded with propaganda and leadership and excluding information and all kinds of stuff. So you begin to sway the democracy to vote for their own destruction, and eventually you lead towards tyrannical oligarchy, tyrannical dictatorship, tyrannical government, whatever you want to call it, totalitarianism, whatever you want to call it. That is where we're going now, folks. How's that for the doom and gloom preacher? I mean, it's just a fact. You all see it, you know. And Trump is, as his name says, a final overriding factor resource. He's important. God's giving us a chance. We can look for an Elijah, but Trump is that Elijah. Trump has prophesied so many weird things that he doesn't even know what's coming out of his mouth. God's hand is on that man, I'm telling you. God can use anyone. There is a bizarre humility in Trump despite his outward braggadocia personality. He's got a level of humility. He speaks the truth. He doesn't like liars. He doesn't like deception. He hates it. He's sick and tired of it. The false news, as he says. False news is along the lines of the propaganda arm of communism, which is an absolute necessity for communism to prevail. Years back, communism was the big known threat. We all hid under our desks when we were young kids, you know, to prepare for nukes coming from the communists. Now we embrace it, folks. It really, I mean, you know, maybe I'm putting a little too much into this, but, you know, it's all of a sudden it's this palatable, tolerable form of government that we think is somehow superior to our filthy capitalism. I mean, they have just trashed capitalism. Capitalism is not bad. Abraham Lincoln wrote about the Bible. He said, "In regard to this great book, I have but to say it is the best gift God has given to men. All the good Savior gave to the world was communicated through this book. But for it, we could not know right from wrong." In other words, without a Bible, we wouldn't know right from wrong. The Jewish people are the ones that establish right from wrong on the earth. If you even go to the early Egyptian commandment system, there's 40 of them, but 10 of them are straight from the Judaic Ten Commandments of Moses. At the Gettysburg Address, Lincoln also said, "From these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of their devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth." So he says right in there, under God, this nation under God, by the people, for the people, and of the people, shall not perish, but it's got to remain under the umbrella of God. You know, Judeo-Christian values embraced by the American Republic and the people, okay, breaks down as follows. I guess I'll just try to put it into context here myself. I may kind of, you know, I'll just wing it. Our sense of right and wrong and our sense of wisdom come from the use of reason and common sense. Okay? So, but also, and importantly, from the Bible, which by faith was considered by our founding fathers to be God's inspired text, not just from the mind or heart of a man. This faith led to our mottos, "In God we trust, one nation under God," etc. Our founding fathers were believers in the God of the Bible. Even if some were not Orthodox Christians, as I was saying, they put their faith into the Declaration of Independence. They put their faith into our laws, into our national monuments, into our culture. Faith is a part of American culture, something that atheists, secularists, humanists, socialists, communists, and other religions should acknowledge and accept as historically accurate truth. We've got people trying to rewrite history to remove this from our history. To remove the results of biblical faith from America is to undo what the founding fathers have done. I mean, in a nutshell, right? So here, you know, as far as our Judeo-Christian values broken down, first is our sense of right and wrong and wisdom, which comes from our own common sense, but most importantly from the Bible. Number two is truth is sacred. And what I mean by this is this absolute right and wrong stuff, you know, not absolute right and wrong, relative right and wrong. This idea that what's wrong for you isn't wrong for me. Folks, I tried to watch a movie this weekend, Rubbish Filth. You probably all know years back a book came out called The Shack. And it was this bleh, you know, it was trying to mask itself as some kind of a God experience that this guy had, and he goes to this shack, and I won't get into it. God is a black woman, okay? The Holy Spirit is an Asian woman, and Jesus is a Palestinian man. Now, I don't care so much about the race. The sex of God is pretty offensive. And then it goes on. I mean, I don't even know where to start. Trash, okay? Don't waste your money on renting this video. It's absolute blasphemy. I shut it off three times. You're like, why'd you shut it off three times? I kept going, it can't be this bad. You know, I wanted a little bit of spiritual food, man. I kept trying. Ouch. So at one point, this guy who lost his daughter to a pervert abductor, you know, he's in this cave and this woman appears to him, some apparition of God, whatever. And they have this big conversation about, he says, these people should be go to hell and all this. And she's like, what about this person? Should they be judged to hell? What about that person? What about this person? He's like, yeah, judge them all to hell. And then she's like, what about your father? You know, for the terrible things he did to you. And he goes, yeah, judge him to hell. And she's acting like he's just terrible to say this. Here's the kicker. She goes, fine. Well, what I'm going to make you do is choose between your two kids. One spends eternity in heaven with God and the other is eternally damned to hell. And he goes, I can't make that decision. She goes, well, that's what you're trying to make God do, to choose between his children, which ones go to heaven and which ones go to hell. No, it's not what we're trying to make God do. It's what he said he does in his word. And yes, God is righteous and God is just. And they try to key off on this phony, ooey goopy love side of God. God's love is not oopy goopy. God's love is pure truth. And as I just said, as an American Judeo ethic, truth is sacred. There can be no liberty or justice or happiness. You know, it says the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? It says that we're created equal and endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights. Unalienable rights. That means they cannot be taken away. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life is obvious. That's why it's so bad to kill somebody. You deprive them of their very existence. Pretty harsh stuff. Liberty is freedom. The pursuit of happiness is the ability to do whatever the heck you want. You want a business, you want to own a house, whatever. They had the ownership of property in there initially, didn't want to offend the slaves. They thought the pursuit of happiness was a broader perspective. And I agree. Because like I said, that may mean traveling the world. That may mean opening your own business. That may mean serving in a charity the rest of your life. That could mean buying a ranch and working on it. That's the pursuit of happiness, right? So when you get into this where it says, truth is sacred. How can you have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness without truth? Think about it. I know it gets a little philosophical. There can't be any life, liberty, or free. You know, liberty is freedom, folks. There can be no freedom without truth. Because think about it. If there's no truth, if my truth is, I think it's right to go around and cut off people's left ear, well, you don't want to live in my world of my truth, because your truth might believe that it's okay to cut off everybody's nose, and another guy's truth might be that it's okay to cut off everybody's pinky toe. I mean, and pretty soon, what do you got? You got a great big chaotic anarchistic mess. That's what happens when you don't have absolute truths. Anarchy. Truth is sacred. There can be no liberty or justice and very, very little happiness without it. At least not the right kind of happiness, right? Jesus connected truth and liberty when he said, the truth shall make you what? Free. He said, the truth shall give you liberty. In the book of Exodus, in the Old Testament, God describes himself, the Lord, as the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering and abounding in goodness and truth. In Deuteronomy, he is described as the rock. It says his work is perfect. It says for all his ways are justice. He's described as a God of truth and without injustice. In Psalms 25, King David says, show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth. Psalms 51, everyone knows, behold, you desire truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden part you will make me to know wisdom. Truth is sacred, folks. That's an American principle. Locked and loaded. There are no relative truths. They're biblical. Without these absolutes, folks, we've got nothing. The third principle of American, I'm still trying to figure out what to call it, Judeo-Christian values embraced by Americans, I guess. Human life is the first gift of God, and it is of infinite value since man is made in the image of God. Judeo-Christian values have led to a culture of life in America. They've created our culture, which is not supposed to be a culture of death. And it's not outwardly a culture of death, but under the covers, under the darkness, under the veil of darkness, we have a culture of death, don't we? We're so worried about the opiate epidemic and all. Folks, I am so sick of these kinds of things while we are killing millions of babies a year. People have lost their minds. You've got these people, these left-wingers, that are out there picking apart every word that comes out of everybody's mouth, twisting it and turning it and spinning it and making it say what they never intended. All the time. They never stop. It reminds me so much of Timothy, where it says, they have a form of godliness but deny the power thereof. They're so righteous about what you say and how you say it, and don't say the N-word, and don't say bad things about gays, and don't admit your opinion on this, and don't you speak your biblical views, you intolerant bigot. But they deny any power from God. It's all self-righteous filth. And when they say that in Timothy about the mindset of the people of the end times, it is in conjunction with a line of vileness, of absolute disgusting character attributes, I guess I call it. Human life is a gift of God. This is a huge, most important thing. Folks, in other countries where they slaughter and maim and destroy, you've probably seen the videos of Stalinistic Russia, Nazi Germany, Vietnam, Cambodia, where they just line people up by the trenches and just blow their heads off and dump them worse than they treat their own pets. Folks, this is not what America is, but I'm telling you, if this anti-God, anti-truth movement continues on, we're going to get there, because they've got the most heinous hatred. They have a lack of compassion, a lack of understanding, a lack of empathy. They've got none. They are filled with vitriol and disgust because it is motivated by the dark side. Christian values have led to a culture of life in America and not a culture of death. Americans with Judeo-Christian values will defend innocent God-given life. Our liberty is, number four, is our liberty is a gift from God, and it's so stated in the Declaration of Independence. It's also stated in the New Testament Christian Bible, where it says, now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is what? Liberty. It says, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Americans with Judeo-Christian values will defend their God-given liberty from tyranny and terror. And we're facing terror now. We have got to fight it. We've got to fight it vehemently. We can't, in this whole thing about, well, it's radical Islamic terror. You can't say it's regular Islamic terror, because by golly, you would not want to read the Bible or the Quran, because that just wouldn't be fair. Real nice Muslims don't read the Quran, because if they did, they'd have to be radical Muslims, radical terrorists. It's such a twist of words. Number five, Judeo-Christian ethic and American values. Human creativity, and this is a big one to me, is a gift from God, and it is not to be unjustly suppressed by totalitarian, tyrannical, or excessively taxing governments. It says God created us in his image. God created us in his image. It's the created part that makes us in his image. He created, we create. This is why our founding fathers from the very get-go put patents and trademarks and these kinds of things into the Constitution. Think of how profound that is. They protected intellectual property. They protected your ability to create ideas and to be individualistically creative. It's pretty phenomenal. This is very, very providentially led, divinely inspired, I guess you can call it. Human creativity is a gift from God. It's not to be unjustly suppressed by totalitarianism, tyrannical, or excessively taxing governments. Excessively taxing governments takes your ability away to be creative and to express yourself financially. Oh, I said financially. That's a bad word, right? For Christians, money. Ooh. No, God knows. God wants us to be blessed. He wants us. We get the fruits of our labor, the rewards of our efforts. And yes, he will bless some different than others. The work ethic that we have, work ethic is an important part of Judeo-Christian values, since honorable work is a reflection of a God-given human creativity. Human reason, our common sense, our ability, free will to think, is also a part of our God-given creativity. It's led to scientific knowledge and technological advances that are pretty amazing. Communistic, socialistic regulations and controls is what comes in and squelches man's ability to grow. I'll tell you, the 60s were a wild time. We were going to do everything. We were making crazy cool stuff. We didn't have all the EPA ruining everything. We were shooting men to the moon. And then the hyper regulations hit in the 70s. They come in with a false, you know, oil crisis, and oh no, we better tell people how much oil they can burn. Folks, that's a lie of lies. The earth is absolutely loaded with crude oil. The CO2 carbon emissions thing, as far as, you know, our carbon footprint, it's all lies. It's all lies. Now, don't get me wrong. Over time, do we need to become more efficient? Yes. Do we need to become less wasteful and less destructive and polluting? Yes, absolutely. But this whole concept that we have to squelch all progress over your CO2 emissions so Al Gore can be the first green billionaire is a bunch of malarkey. The scientific and knowledge that we've gained is from the Judeo-Christian side. It's that freedom of thought, that ability to expand and expound. When Christ said, I go to prepare a place for you, I'll come back and get you when I'm done. That's been 2,000 years, folks. I had a vision of heaven months back. I won't get into it, but I'll tell you what. It is mammothly massive. It's totally different than I ever would have guessed. It's unbelievable. Huge. 1,500 miles tall, wide, and deep. You don't even comprehend that. 1,500 miles. You can't even see that far. A satellite in orbit over the Earth is only 100 miles up. Multiply that times 15. God creates and builds. Why don't we? Well, we do. But then what happens is, oh, that becomes only for the rich and the regulatory agencies control, and you've got building stuff, and it's just a big mess. Human reason is such a part of God-given creativity and has led to such amazing technological advances in scientific knowledge. Our reason and science are important aspects of Judeo-Christian values. Human creativity is central to the pursuit of happiness. Think about that. Pursuit of happiness, you've got to be able to use your human creativity. But it does not guarantee it. It doesn't guarantee happiness. It doesn't guarantee anything, but it allows you to have that opportunity. Opportunity is the key word with God. Totalitarian systems, such as communism and Islamic Sharia law, they guarantee utopian happiness, but they don't deliver it. It's a fantasy. They guarantee this utopian happiness that what? You'll just sit around and be super happy. It appeals to the sluggards. And unfortunately, our government is creating more and more of those. The sixth Judeo-Christian ethic is to establish justice, which is commanded repeatedly in the Hebrew Bible. And this is how it's been done in America. Honor life, liberty, and creativity. Liberty means freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. No established or state-supported religion. The right to bear arms in act of self-defense. Uninterrupted elections and the division of powers into three distinct branches. Where we're now heading in America is in the wrong direction. In my opinion, to provide special rights for certain groups of people. That's the problem, is it's all this special this and special that. Our founding fathers acknowledged these basic rights for everyone, for all people, and our Civil War hypothetically, supposedly enforced it for the American slaves when they were denied their God-given liberties. I say supposedly because there was a lot of legislative movement around it. I think Lincoln jumped the gun and killed a lot of men unnecessarily. I think there were better ways, my opinion only, history, etc., whatever. Like it or not, it's history. The seventh principle of Judeo-Christian ethics and American values is to hate evil. This is what it used to be. It's commanded three times in the Old Testament from the book of Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Hear the prophet Isaiah, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness. Woe to them that call evil good. Are we not doing that? Abortion's good. Homosexuality's good. Broken families are good. Sexual experimentation is good. You know, we've got some crazy stuff, don't we? Americans with Judeo-Christian values, as opposed to Europeans, still believe in the death penalty for premeditated murder. America is still the nemesis of terrorists and tyrants. They still fear us. We are the nemesis of tyranny. The death penalty thing should be there. We've got that so butchered up. Same thing, liberal foolishness. The eighth Judeo-Christian principle of where we're at is love your neighbor, which again is in the Bible. Love your enemy, commanded by the New Testament. Our founding fathers and generations of Americans have had to square the values of hate evil with love your enemy. This is done by hating the evil within the enemies of God-given life and liberty, but not hating the evildoer himself. Which is tough. We've got to love our neighbor. We do have to hate evil. Number nine, in the Judeo-Christian value system, there's a natural and common sense balance between compassion and the courageous confrontation of evil. And you can see this metaphorically as a natural balance between femininity and masculinity, which are both good and necessary. The secular culture of Europe and of many in the U.S. now are foolishly suppressing the masculinity of our Judeo-Christian American culture, which is putting our society out of balance. They're effeminizing the male and masculinating the female. Why? God didn't do it right? I mean, come on, folks. Whichever side of that fence you're on, I think you probably know there's a good system there. Now, a lot of women are like, I've been suppressed by men and they beat on me and they, you know. Well, stay away from those kind of guys. Take responsibility. Don't be a victim. I know there's all kinds of debates on that, but we're all accountable for our own lives. If it ain't right, get out. Number 10 is from many one, e pluribus unum. Ethnicity and race doesn't matter, but values do. Number 11, and I got to wrap this up, The natural resources of the earth, including the animals and the rest of creation, should be honored and well cared for, however, used and enjoyed and never worshipped. Now, that was kind of a random deal I did there. I know you didn't see that coming, but it was something I've been thinking about a lot. So, freedom, liberty, American, you know, we've got this American Judeo set of values. Folks, I never leave myself time to talk about my area of expertise, which is financial stuff, and I always end up saying stuff at the end. I don't have a lot of time. If you've got 401ks, IRAs, whatever, I'm telling you, I'm everything going on. If you move into precious metals-based assets, let us build you a portfolio, you will do very well, period. You'll save, you'll secure. The values are so good. We hand-select stuff that's so awesome, and if you want to put stuff away 5, 10, 20 years, leave it for inheritance, whatever. This is what we do. We do a beautiful job of it. We'll build you a terrific portfolio. It'll outperform anything else you have. You don't have to worry about losing the value overnight based on a scheme, a Ponzi scheme. And folks, one after the next hit the system, don't they? Bailout after bailout. We've had 21 bailouts. What's the next bailout coming? $2.6 trillion in student loan and auto debt? You don't think that's going to blow sky high? It's out of control. It's one thing after the next. It will come. I'm just afraid it's going to be combined with war and other stuff. We've talked about the debt, the deficit. Just get out of paper altogether. It's wrong. It's man-made. It's debt-based. It's simple decision. Just obey the Bible. We've been doing this a long time. We're good at it. Give us a call, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website at coinsplus.com. Let us just help you secure your wealth in a rock-solid system. The most liquid asset you'll ever own. Nothing tricky. It's not some crazy annuity that you'll never get your money out of. You can liquidate tomorrow. You can buy today and liquidate tomorrow with just a couple percent variation. But in the long run, it's going to outperform everything. You would just be shocked. So thank you again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. We will be back Wednesday. Give us a call and get that stuff taken care of. Bye-bye. God bless.